Welcome to the Soulful Insights podcast, where we support you on a transformative journey to nurture the soul, calm the mind, and awaken the spirit. So if you're joining me today and you enjoy this podcast, please consider donating and the link in our RSS feed. That really does help me continue to do this work and support you in your healing journeys. So I would definitely appreciate that. Today's podcast is on rewriting your story and how you can transform your life from living in survival mode to triumph. And I've experienced this transformation myself, and I have guided many clients through this journey as well. And so today I want to share with you some of the tools and techniques that I used so that you can begin your own journey. But before we begin, and before we go any further in this podcast, I do want to offer a trigger warning. We will be discussing physical and sexual abuse, as well as self-harm and suicidal thoughts in this podcast. And so if that is something that is triggering to you in any way, please take care of yourself and determine whether this podcast is appropriate for you. So I just want to give that warning to anybody so that you can take care of yourself if you need to. I'm briefly going to share with you my story, and then we're going to move into the modalities that I used to change my life in miraculous ways. And I think it's really important for you to hear a story and where someone was in their life and what they went through, and then how they were able to move out of that. And so hopefully this will be something that's beneficial to you and might resonate in some way or another. You might be able to connect with some of the experiences that I have had. You may, you know, have had similar experiences or even different experiences, but may have had, you know, similar issues such as anxiety or other things that come up because of things you've experienced in your life. So before I go into my story, I want to first acknowledge that both of my parents were and still are very broken people. They both had traumatic childhoods of their own, and they brought that trauma into their marriage, and they brought it into their parenting. And they are good people. They did the best that they could with what they knew. But unfortunately, my childhood was very traumatic for me. And I am not angry at my parents, but it has been quite a journey. So first of all, I want to explain to you a little bit about the way that I was before a lot of this trauma happened. I was a very whimsical child, and I think that's the best way to describe it. I had a wild imagination. I was very creative, introspective. I was very introverted and shy around people that I didn't know, but I would talk your ear off if I felt safe with you. I was highly sensitive. I had intuitive abilities from a very young age, and I loved nature. So that was kind of the way that I was as a child. When I was about 5 years old, I was an only child at this point. I was often lonely, and I would go outside in the backyard and I named all of the fruit trees. And back in that time, everyone had, you know, large lots. We had a lot of trees, a lot of garden. And I named all the fruit trees, and I would often hold their branches and talk to them. And they were my friends, and I really saw them as my friends. I would also find any cat or dog that was running around in the streets. I'd put them in a stroller, wrap them in blankets. I would baby them. I was very connected to animals, very connected to nature. And at that same age, when I was 5 years old, was my first experience of sexual abuse. And I was extremely traumatized by this abuse. I didn't understand what was happening to me after the abuse occurred. Obviously, I didn't really understand the abuse either. It was not something that was very quick. It was quite a lengthy experience of abuse in that at that time. But as an adult, looking back, I see how I dissociated during the abuse. And I developed severe anxiety and panic attacks after that, but I was punished and ridiculed. I was called a crybaby by my grandma. My anxiety drove my dad crazy. he was always very upset and would try to put me in situations to like make me get over it, right? So when I would be rocking back and forth and humming to myself in a situation that was traumatizing to me, my dad would actually increase what was causing that anxiety to try to get me over it. So I definitely had a lot of struggles. I dealt with that sexual abuse. Nobody knew about it. I didn't talk to anybody. I didn't really quite fully, I knew it was awful experience, but anyway, I didn't know how to articulate what had happened because this was before I even got into kindergarten. It was a few months before kindergarten. So as a child, I didn't know how to express what had happened. Throughout my childhood, I experienced physical abuse. I was hung upside down by the ankles of my pants, and my dad was shaking me violently and yelling at me. I was beat with a metal rod that left bruises to the point where sitting down was very painful. I was whipped with belts. I was locked in my room for hours at a time. There was actually a metal latch that my dad installed on the outside of my bedroom and also the bedroom of my brothers so that they could lock us in our room for punishment and we couldn't get out. There was a lot of screaming, a lot of yelling. My emotions were always like kind of suppressed and don't be a crybaby. I'll give you something to cry about, that type of a thing. So, and I want to give you an idea of what I did that brought about this type of punishment, because a lot of times people will think, oh, you must have just been like a really bad kid or something. And I really felt that way. I thought I was stupid. I was punished over my report card a lot. And I thought I grew up thinking I was dumb. In fact, it wasn't until my late 20s that I found my old report cards in a box in my basement. And I was married at this point and I had two children. And my mom had given me some boxes of my belongings. They were just in the basement and we were going through things. And I pulled out like a report card from third grade and I opened it up and I had all A's. And, you know, a B or something. And then I had one C. And that C was in handwriting. And let me tell you, I am fully ambidextrous. And so my handwriting is not great, but I can write with both hands. So, but it was shocking to me to see this report card and be like, there's mostly A's. And the only C I got was in handwriting, which doesn't matter anyway. That doesn't mean I'm stupid. I just don't have beautiful handwriting, which doesn't really matter in my opinion. And so, but I was ridiculed. I was punished. My dad, you got to do better. My dad is very much a perfectionist. And that was one of those moments of realization of like, I really wasn't stupid. I was actually really smart. But anyway, moving on. I knocked over an aloe vera plant accidentally when I was reaching for something. And that equaled getting spanked with a wooden spoon. When I was 8 years old, me and my twin brothers were playing outside, and I was 8 and they were 2 and they were in diapers with me. My dad was the one that was supposed to be watching us. I was only 8 years old. I was not old enough to babysit or be in charge of small children, but I got spanked for allowing them to be outside in their diapers. One night I heard my brothers crying, and I'm not talking like spanked. I'm talking like, you know, whipped with a belt type situations. These were not just, I shouldn't have been spanked for that anyways, but when I say spanked, that's I'm talking like until you're bruised type of a situation. I heard my brothers crying in their crib one night, and my parents were downstairs in the basement, and so I was thinking they probably can't hear them. And at this point I was probably, it was just before I turned 9 years old, so I was quite young. And so I went in to check on my brothers because they were very little. They were in cribs. They were very little. And I was whipped with a belt multiple times because my dad thought that I had woke them up. And it was probably like 11 o'clock at night that my parents were still awake. But the reality is I didn't wake them up. I heard them crying and I went in to check on them. But my dad would not believe me. He thought that I had woke them up, and apparently that warranted being whipped with a belt. And I had to bend over and be whipped. So a lot of times, it was not that I had done some terrible thing that should have resulted in this type of treatment. And those are just a few examples. This was something that occurred frequently, and I never knew when this was going to happen, because it wasn't that I was mouthing off or doing something, which I don't think we should cause physical harm to other people for any reason. If you would not be allowed to do it to your spouse or someone at work, you should not be allowed to do it to a child. That is my opinion. If I could get in legal trouble for spanking my husband or spanking a coworker, I should get in a lot more trouble for doing it to an innocent child who is just trying to learn how to exist in this world. It's just not fair to them at all, even if we perceive that what they're doing was bad. But I lived in a lot of fear because I never knew when my dad was going to lose it. I didn't know what was going to set him off. And I heard my parents argue a lot. I didn't know what was going on. But they would be in their bedroom. My mom would be crying. There would be screaming. There was pounding on the floor. I heard things banging around. There was a lot of noise. I didn't know what was going on. And I remember wishing that my parents would get divorced and my dad would go away. To add insult to injury, my grandma was very hard on me as well. She was very extroverted. She spoke her mind. She had a lot of her own deep trauma that I've become aware of as I've grown up. But she would ridicule my piano playing and tell me that I play too loud. And it was just this thing of like, you couldn't ever do anything right. I could play a beautiful Beethoven piece 6 months after I started piano lessons. And my teacher was like, you need to get her like with a real piano teacher because she has insane talent. And yet my grandma would find something. Oh, you're playing too loud. She would call me a crybaby, a poor sport. I just lived surrounded by negativity, and it was aimed at me all the time. And so I struggled with panic attacks. I struggled with anxiety. I had a lot of mental health issues. I was suicidal. I think I was 10 years old. I remember standing in front of the medicine cabinet, and I kept wondering, what could I take? But I remember thinking, if I take something and it doesn't kill me, I could go blind? Or I just remember my 10-year-old mind thinking it could do something bad to me, and I was too afraid. I would have been fine if I knew that it would kill me, but if it was going to do something else, I was too scared. So that was kind of what I lived in. I really suffered severe depression, anxiety, panic attacks, that type of thing. And then I was sexually abused again when I was 13 years old. And when my mom picked me up to take me home, I was rocking back and forth in the car. I was screaming at the top of my lungs. I was hysterical. I think I was like hitting myself in the face and screaming. And I was very hysterical. And instead of asking me what happened or trying to understand what had traumatized me to cause me to be so hysterical, she just told me I must have understood something that happened, and she never inquired. I came home hysterical. My dad threatened to give me something to cry about. He threatened me, and they even were going to take me back to that place again. They did not care. There was no like trying to understand. It was like, you're just acting crazy and you just need to knock it off. So I was again left to deal with the trauma of sexual abuse on my own. Now, I had been sexually assaulted at other points in my life. I'm not going to go into every single time, but these were two major situations when I was 5 and when I was 13. I spent most of my days in a fog. I almost felt like I was observing life happening, but I wasn't connected to it. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what was happening. I was 13. I had no idea. But I felt like I was going through the motions, and I felt like I was like my eyes were like a window. Like I was looking out of them, but I wasn't connected to what was happening. It was like I was just observing from a distance. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I kind of walked around in a haze. And when I would come home from school, I would be so spent. I would watch TV for the entire evening. I didn't do homework. I didn't do anything. I just sat there and just tried to zone out to the TV. And I was labeled as lazy. I was punished. But I just needed to zone out from the pain that I felt all the time. I didn't know how to handle all this pain, all this trauma that I'd been through of physical abuse, sexual abuse, being sexually assaulted, all of these things. And this happened, you know, there were other issues when I was 12. There was other issues throughout my life where traumatic things had even happened. My grades were terrible at this point. In ninth grade, I had a 1.7 GPA. Yeah. No one tried to understand why I was in this haze, why I was so disconnected, why this was going on. I eventually ended up being grounded. I was not allowed to talk on the phone. I was not allowed to do anything. I had to come straight home from school and do homework, and I was not allowed to do anything, which just further increased my suffering. I lost all my friends. I lost all my connection to the outside world completely. And so now I am trapped in a neglectful, abusive environment without any like way to escape it. And at this point, I started cutting. I was contemplating suicide. I was extremely depressed. I was writing in my journal that I hated myself. I hated my life. I even started burning my face with a curling iron at one point. Very, very, very traumatized. But in the high demand religion, if you listen to my first podcast, in the high demand religion that I was in, and in my family dynamics, therapy was not really considered. It was just to suck it up and deal with it. That was pretty much the attitude. Like, you're the problem. You are the problem, and you just need to get over it and stop acting like this. That was really the way that I was treated. But interestingly, it was right at this time in my life that I met my husband. And I met him towards the end of the 3 months that I had been grounded. Now, I want you to realize this 3 month grounding was not a 3 month grounding. It was indefinite. There was no time limit to it. But I met my husband. We moved across the street from him at this point. And so I was 14 years old when I moved across the street from him. And this was actually an absolute tender mercy for me in my life, because it was maybe not quite a year after my second sexual abuse experience when I was 13. And I was getting to the point where I hated men. I wanted nothing to do with them. I never wanted to get married. They were gross. They were disgusting. They were perverts. All they do is hurt you. I was getting into this really deep depression. I was self-harming. It was a really bad situation. And here is my husband. He's 16 and he is gentle. He is soft-spoken. He's tender. He's extremely loving and sweet. This is something I'd never experienced from a single human in my entire life. At all. I was made fun of. I was teased. I was ridiculed. I was abused. I was sexually abused. I didn't know what love felt like. And he treated me like a queen. So let me give you one example. When I was 15, I became very sick. I could hardly lift up my head or even lift up my arms. I was very, very sick. This is probably the most sick I've ever been in my life. I had a raging fever. No, I was not taken to the doctor. No, nobody did anything. It was just, you'll get over it when you get over it. He was 17 years old at the time. And, he calls and I am like, can barely talk and I'm super sick. A normal 17-year-old boy would probably go hang out with his friends and be like, yo, call me when you feel better. He did not. He could have gone and played basketball with his buddies. But instead, he came over and he sat by my bed all night. He would go and get cold rags and put them on my head. He held my hand. He would help me sip ice water to, that was his way of trying to keep my fever down. I mean, he's 17. He doesn't know a whole lot, but he's doing everything he can because I have this raging fever and I am shaking and weak, extremely weak. And he sat there and tried to take care of me and played board games with my six-year-old sister all night. He was just sitting right by my bed and she was in my room as well, and they played board games, and he would hold my hand at times and go get another cold rag to put on my head, and he spent the entire night until his curfew with me. That's who he is, and that's what I needed at that time. It was the first time in my life where I felt what love really was like, and he was exactly what I needed. I don't know why my parents, I think my mom found my journal and how suicidal I was, and they saw some of the cuts on my arms, and my mom was like, she can't live like this. You have to stop this grounding. And luckily my dad listened. And I'm glad they allowed me to date him, because it really was a time in my life where I needed that. And I know a lot of people can have negative ideas about that. I don't care. You can think what you want to think, but it was really part of my journey that I needed in order to pull myself out of this place that I was in. We did end up getting married, and, you know, all of that, we are just, I don't know, just absolutely, it's not that we agree on everything, but to be honest with you, as far as like fighting and arguing, that just doesn't happen. We can disagree, but both of us, we were just, the only way I can describe it is soulmates. Like, we knew instantly. We were deeply connected. We spent every waking hour together. Even when I was 15, I knew all his relatives. I knew his grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles and everybody. I'd go to Easter or Christmas parties, or we went to church together every Sunday, alternating Sundays of whose family we sat with. And it just, we literally were just head over heels in love with each other from the very beginning. So we got married when I was 19. We'd been dating for 5 years, so we knew each other very well. But it wasn't until I was about 25 years old that I had my first mental health crisis. And I'm not going to go into all of the details of that, but I started working with a therapist, and she got me on antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds, and I had a horrible experience. The entire thing was a horrible experience. It triggered a lot more pain and suffering, and I started cutting after being on the antidepressants and going through therapy. I started cutting again. And really it was because the antidepressants and everything numbed me out so much that I just didn't care anymore. I wasn't happy. It's not like it's a happy pill that you take and it's like, oh my gosh, I have like all this happiness and joy. No, it just numbed me out. So I had a session with another therapist, and this is the first time in my entire life I told someone about my sexual abuse. I had never, ever told a soul. And his reaction to me bringing that up was so horrendous, I'm not even going to go into it, that I closed up and didn't speak of it again until I was probably in my 30s. So I moved away from therapy. I weaned myself off the meds because, like I said, they numbed me out and just led to more self-harm, and it did not help at all. And I started turning to meditation and just doing some inner work as I was finding on the internet or whatever, because I was too afraid to talk to anybody. And eventually, through different ways, I found a woman who did cranial sacral work and meditation healing journeys. And I did a healing journey over just one incidence of abuse with my dad. And that journey lasted an hour and a half. And when I walked out of her office, I felt like I was on cloud nine. I had never experienced something so incredibly powerful in all my life. For the first time in my entire life, I had peace. I didn't have anxiety. I was not experiencing that inner turmoil and suffering and pain that I had carried pretty much all my life. I always had anxiety going on. I always had pain and suffering and stuff going on in my life, this was a huge turning point in my life. And I learned valuable tools that day that I've used throughout my life on my healing journey. And I did go back. I experienced a few of those, and then I did do some other kind of alternative emotional healing work throughout my journey. But I want to acknowledge here in the story that some people find therapy to be helpful. And some people use medications and a wide variety of tools in their healing journey. And I am not here to tell you that any tool is wrong. I'm just telling you my story. And for me, three different therapists, all of them caused more harm than good for me. Medication numbed me out and just made me more likely to cause self-harm, made things worse for me. It didn't make me happy. Like, I was like, people act like these meds are so amazing. And I'm like, I expected it to be a happy pill. It was not. It made things worse. So for me, in my personal journey, those were not the answer. But my story is unique to me, and every person has their own journey. So please do not take this as me saying, you have to do what I did, or this is wrong for everyone. I am saying everybody's journey is unique and different. And your journey doesn't have to look like mine. There is not one right way to do something. And I am not about the one way for all people. So I just want to make it very clear that I am not saying what anyone else should do on their journey. I'm just telling you my story. So moving on through my journey, after this, I started seeking out all kinds of alternative healing modalities. I started meditating. I was training for a half marathon. I read a lot of self-help books, a lot of books on healing and all of that, whatever. I don't remember all the topics because I realized this was 20 years ago. I went to healing seminars, and my healing journey started to begin in my mid-20s, my mid to late 20s. And I want to share with you a couple of the techniques that helped me on this journey. And I didn't use them all at once. It was kind of like they slowly built upon themselves as I went along. So I used intuitive journaling, and I'll get more in depth about some of these things later, but I used intuitive journaling. It wasn't really until my 40s that I started working with my spirit guides. I did not understand that at that time. I learned to connect with my higher self. I learned about forgiveness. And this is one I know a lot of people have a really hard time with this. But what I want to explain to you that I learned on this journey about forgiveness. In the beginning, I held on to my pain, to my anger, all of those emotions, because the reality is I felt like what they did to me was wrong. They do not deserve forgiveness. What they did was not okay. And you know what? That's absolutely right. What they did, and I want you to say this, I want to say this to you. Whatever happened to you was not okay, and it will never be okay. It will never be right that they did those things. It will never be okay that they did those things. And it isn't that you need to let them off the hook. Okay? I don't want you to feel that way at all. But I learned that forgiving those people that hurt me didn't mean what they did to me was okay. It did not mean that I was letting them off the hook. It meant that I refused to allow them to have any more power over my life. Because what happens when I'm hurting, when I'm suffering, when I'm angry, it doesn't hurt them. They don't care. Someone could abuse me and walk away. They're living their life. They're out there living their life. I'm the one that's hurting. I'm the one that's suffering. But that hurting and suffering doesn't do anything to them. So why do I keep holding on to it? I realized forgiveness means I will not allow that person to rob me of one more minute of my joy, of my happiness. I deserve to be happy. If I continue in hate and anger and resentment and hurt and suffering, that person has power over my life until I say no more. That's what forgiveness is. Forgiveness isn't saying, you know what, it's okay that you did that. That's fine. You should be let off the hook. No, it isn't. But your resentment is not punishing them. Your anger is not punishing them. It isn't. Forgiveness is about you and you alone. Their day will come. Their day of reckoning will come. Believe me, it will come. They're not going to get out of this world and get off scot-free. Whatever your religious beliefs are, they're not going to get away with it. I promise you that. But that punishment or whatever it is, that reckoning that they have to do isn't going to come from you. Their payment, whatever it is that you want to think of, their payment for what they did to you, for hurting you, isn't going to come from your anger or your hurt or your pain or your suffering. It doesn't. Forgiveness isn't about them. It's about releasing you out from under their power. So when I look at abuse that I went through, whether that was sexual abuse, physical abuse, whatever it is, you know what the biggest stick it to them I can give that person is enjoying my life, finding happiness, because I can turn around and say, you don't have power over me. You are not going to rob me of one more second of happiness because I deserve to be happy. I deserve to live a fulfilling life of peace and joy. I deserve that. You don't, but I do. And I'm not going to let you have power over my life, have the power to take that from me. You don't have a right. Yeah, you did a bad thing. You hurt me. But it's done. It's over. And your power over me is over. I take my power back. I will live my life in joy and happiness, and I'm not letting you take that from me. You may have taken it from me in that moment, but you're not going to do it anymore. That's where you need to get your sass on, girl. Get it on. Get your sass on. Do not let that person take your power away from you. Every minute that you suffer and you hurt beyond that, you are allowing them to have power over your life. You are giving your power away to your abuser. That's what you're doing. And I'm not saying you don't need to feel it. And I'm not saying you don't need to process it. And I'm not saying you don't need to work through it. This is not a one-time deal. I get that. I've been through it. I've been there. You need to feel it. Sometimes you need to scream. You've got to let it out. I am not saying you should not feel it. This is not about suppressing your emotions. That is not what this is about. Part of forgiveness is not like, oh, they did a thing and tomorrow I'm going to be like, hey, okay, it's done. I'm over it. I'm moving on with my life. I'm going to be happy now. That's not how this works. Forgiveness is a process and it's different for every person. But if you've been carrying the weight of this for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. You should not do that. We're going to turn around. Yeah. Have I expressed anger towards the people that hurt me? Oh, hell yes, I have. I absolutely have. Through my meditative healing journeys, whatever comes up, it comes up. I yell, I scream. I don't censor myself. I don't. I may not swear a whole lot and cuss in my life, but there's a lot of cuss words that come out in those moments that I don't normally say. I'll let it out. Sometimes you need to cry. Sometimes you need to scream. Sometimes you need to swear. Whatever it is, you work it up. You let it come up and you let it flow out. Do not keep it inside. It is like poison. It will rob you of your joy. It will. And you know what? That person should not have that kind of power over you. This is what forgiveness is about. It's why a lot of people get really angry at forgiveness. And a lot of religious people talk about forgiveness. And let me be real with you. Religious people suck at talking about forgiveness, okay? They talk about forgiveness as like, you need to forgive the sinner. No. It's not about them. It's not about them. They're going to get theirs. Trust me, they will. But for you, we're going to work through the hurt. We're going to work through the pain. We're going to work through those things. But at the end of the day, we're going to get your sass on. And we're going to say, you are not allowed to have power over me for one more minute. When I was sexually abused at 5 years old, that man overpowered me. I was a 5-year-old little girl. I had no chance. He did. He overpowered me. I had panic attacks, anxiety, all kinds of things as a child that I did not know how to process what happened to me. And I can guarantee you, even if I tried to tell my parents, they wouldn't listen to me anyway. But when I was old enough to understand, I did process it. I told him right where he could stick it. I yelled. I did. I mean, I didn't go personally confront him, obviously. But through my healing journeys, I confronted the anger. I confronted the pain, the hurt, the suffering, the confusion, the everything. It's not easy. But at the end of the day, when I felt the release of all of it, and there wasn't anger coming up anymore, and there wasn't the hurt, and there wasn't those things coming up in these journeys anymore, the last thing that I do is let them go. They're going to get theirs, whether you believe in karma, whether you believe in judgment, God, whatever it is, they're going to get theirs. Trust me. But when that stops coming up, the last piece, forgiveness, it's not about them. It's not about saying, oh, it's okay now. Nope. Still not okay. 100% still not okay. But guess what? I got to have my power. I am taking my happiness and my joy and my fulfilling life, and you can go to hell, but I am not going to let you destroy my happiness and my joy for one more second. Because really, honestly, you are reliving and recycling this abuse over and over and over again. And you're letting this person have power over your life. You're letting them rob you of joy for years. Don't do that. Don't let this person ruin your life forever. Let's heal and come and be whole. And that's what forgiveness is about. It's about you. It's about you, not them. And I hope that this kind of helps you understand. And I know I went on this for a while, but it's so important. It's a crucial piece that a lot of people refuse to do in their healing journey because they think it means that they're letting someone off the hook. You're not. You're not. Because your pain and your suffering and your anger isn't punishing them anyway. It's not, you're not letting them off the hook because you weren't, they weren't on the hook to begin with. You weren't punishing them. And so by letting it go, you're basically just taking your own power back. And I hope you understand that. So I'm not going to go on that forever, but if you have any questions, please let me know. And I can help you understand that more because I really, really want people to understand how crucial that is for healing. And it is. It is a piece that you cannot skip. You can't skip that. So I did do meditation, and I know for people who've been through trauma, especially, meditation could be really hard. And so I like to start more often with my trauma clients with meditative walks because that deep stillness sometimes can bring up too much. And I understand that. And so meditative walks or dancing can be better where there's movement and there's music and there's things going on. And we can move into, you know, other meditations later on. The meditative healing journeys were a key for me. And I'm not going to go into like depth of what that means because it's different for every person. And I work some of my clients through these meditative healing journeys. Sometimes they are inner child work. Sometimes they are just like healing relationship issues or whatever through these healing journeys. And it looks different for every person and every experience. And also it looks different based on your own spiritual beliefs, whether you're religious or whatever. They look different, but those were so key for me. And it was a woman that first brought me through a few of these that I started learning how powerful they were. And I learned the technique myself. And so that is something that I use with my clients if they want to. And really, honestly, when I work with clients, It is always based on what you're comfortable with and what resonates with you. Inner child work was also really important for me. I didn't do a ton of it earlier on. I've been doing more of it in my 40s, but I did do a little bit of inner child work when I was in my mid-20s, and that was also really profoundly helpful when I was in a state of self-harm. I don't know that I would say suicidal to the point that I would have actually done it, but there definitely was just that, like, not desire to live type of a situation. Sound healing therapy. Oh my gosh, I love sound healing therapy. So if you don't know what that is, there probably are sound baths offered in your local area if you don't live in a place like me. I live about 2 miles outside of a town of 250 people. So there are not sound baths in my local area. I have to drive about an hour and a half away in order to experience that. So I do a lot of it on my own. But I also understand a lot of this work. And so I do sound healing therapy on my own. But if you have those in your local area, try one out. Definitely try one out. If it seems like that resonates with you, I love the sound healing frequencies and therapy. Sound baths can be very profound experiences. So if that seems like something interesting to you, definitely see if there's some sound baths in your local area that you can try. That is something I have actually become certified in sound healing therapy. And so I probably will be offering online sound baths in the future, possibly on the podcast, but I will be offering more in-depth ones on the website. So if you want to learn more about that, go and sign up for the newsletter for when those are released. They'll just be downloads that you can do, that you can download off of the website. So sign up for the newsletter if you want to be notified about that, or follow me on Instagram or whatever. And that's at aurasoulinstitute.com or at aurasoulinstitute on Instagram. So healing crystals or healing stones, I usually call them healing stones. A lot of them do not resonate with me as being crystals. Like, some of them do, I guess. I have some angelite here with me right now. In fact, I have 2 pieces of angelite with me. I have one that's carved into an angel. I absolutely love this angel. This angel is just, it's carved to be like an angel. And I hold it in my hand all the time. I'm doing it right now. I love angelite. And I will go into a little bit more detail about the healing stones, but they really have been a huge part of my journey. And when I was in the high demand religion, I never would have done, like, probably sound baths or used healing stones or a lot of these things, because they were taboo at the time. And as I have gone through a spiritual awakening, which I discussed in my first podcast, I started realizing that these things were created for us, that all of the different stones in nature have different frequencies and different, it's just, we all have a vibration about us. And the lower our vibration, the lower vibration states that we live in, right? So for example, you attract what frequency you are on. And you see this a lot just in watching people. So I'll just kind of explain briefly, because this is just something that I love to talk about. But for example, some of the lowest vibrational frequencies that we can be on, one of them is anger, is one of the lowest vibration emotions. And the reason that these, you know, a lot of religious people would call it sinful, but the reality is, regardless of how you see that in a spiritual context, anger is one of the lowest vibration emotions, but anger causes pain to yourself and to other people. You can cause harm. You know, when we look at people that are abusive, their anger is explosive and they end up hitting people or beating people or harming people. And so when you are perpetuating that low vibration, look at the harm that you are putting out into the world, right? And that's why religious people call it a sin. It doesn't matter whether you believe in God, you don't. It doesn't matter. You can see the harm that's caused by explosive anger. That's a very low vibration. We don't want to live on that vibrational level, right? Same thing with lust. Again, you end up with sexual abuse, rape. And another thing, it causes you harm. when you live out of lust. It's a very low vibration emotion or a low vibration way of living. And the reason is that you see everyone else as something to be consumed and used for your own selfish desires. That's what lust is. And regardless of whether you say, oh, I would never force anyone, I would never whatever. Well, the problem is you view people as products to be consumed. And that's what lust is. The higher vibration from lust would be love, would be intimacy, would be connection. So the problem with lust when it harms other people that are being used and consumed, but also it harms you because it harms your ability. A lot of people that are afraid of connection, they're afraid of commitment, they're afraid of intimacy, will often turn to lust because they want, they're looking for that satisfaction. But the problem is lust is never satisfying. And so you constantly keep turning to using people over and over. This is why they call pornography such as like addicting. And a lot of people say, it's not addicting. It's not like cocaine. Well, you're right. It isn't like cocaine. But the problem is it doesn't satisfy. You have to keep consuming. Because on a soul level, your higher self needs to be satisfied with the connection, with love. We are created out of love. Our essence is love. And so when we are acting outside of that, it isn't satisfying. And so it just perpetuates itself. And you also are damaging your own ability to connect with other humans on a beautiful, intimate level. Because if it's just a stranger, I don't know your name, I don't know who you are, I'm just going to look at you because I think you're hot, do my thing, and walk away. That is the most disconnected, abusive way of existing in the world. Now, a religious person would call it a sin, and that's fine too. A sin is essentially something that causes harm to yourself and other people. Well, I think we can all agree we probably shouldn't be doing that, whether it's abuse, violence, sexual abuse, or even just using other people. And when you are at a higher vibration level, you don't do that because you're looking for the connection. You are loving. And so when you are involved in intimacy with someone, it's an expression of your feelings for them. And that is what is absolutely so beautiful about intimacy versus lust, which is the low vibration level. And we get different vibrations. Another one is shame. And shame isn't harmful to other people, but it's extremely harmful to you when you feel deep shame. And sometimes guilt can be very healthy. When you've done something, when you've yelled at somebody, when you've done something that's harmed another person or used another person in some way, and you feel guilt about that, there's a reason you feel that guilt. And it's good because it should spur you on to raise your vibration so you don't do that again. So we are not putting harm out into the world, but also that we are not using other people for our selfish reasons, whether you're, you know, using people for your own financial gain or lust or any of these things. The reason that there is some guilt associated with that is it's trying to, there is just this, that vibration doesn't match your higher self. And it is a way to spur you on to a higher vibration. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't go there. Some people go to deadening that feeling of guilt, pushing it down until they just get to a state where they can do these things without guilt. And we end up with people, you know, in prisons that are doing these things, right? So anyways, I got on a tangent about vibration, but hopefully that kind of helps you understand when you're trying to raise your vibration, when you are on a vibration level that doesn't match. So if I am watching a show and someone starts to punch another person, I can't watch it. I literally cannot watch it. I will close my eyes. I will turn it off. In fact, I don't even watch TV anymore. I can't because it is not on the same vibration level that I am, and I have absolutely no desire for that. I don't want to watch violence or crude comments or, you know, the way that they portray the treatment of women a lot of times in movies is basically just based on lust, and I have no interest in any of that. It depends on your vibration level. You know, if you can watch someone get tortured on TV, you might want to reflect on on why you're in a vibration level that that doesn't bother you. So anyway, enough with the tangent. So healing stones have their own vibrations. We have our own vibrations. There's a vibration. There's energy about everything, right? And so these stones have different energy, different frequencies, and they will affect you in different ways. And when I was really skeptical about it, and I started using a couple stones I had around the house. And when I started tuning in with my intuitive abilities, I started feeling the absolute power of them. And so I have a million of them. They're everywhere. They're all over my house. I have obsidian fields that are close to my house. And there is a massive amount of snowflake obsidian, mahogany obsidian. And so there's a lot of those stones around. They're very grounding. They have spiritual protection energies. So we place them around the house. We use them all the time. And that's been a huge part of my journey. So anyways, I'll go into that a little bit more. Sorry about the little rant on vibration. Hopefully you enjoyed that. I used essential oils, and yes, they have physical healing properties. Absolutely. I do have a certificate in aromatherapy, and so I do understand their physical healing properties, but they also have spiritual healing properties. And I'm not going to go into a whole lot of that, but we can discuss essential oils. They really capture such a beautiful essence of the flowers and the plants that can bring mental, emotional, and even spiritual healing. So I've used essential oils a lot during my healing journey. Meditative walks, as I talked about before, nature baths, so meaning immersing yourself in nature. And that's really easy for me because I live in the middle of 40 acres of my own property, and my property is in the middle of hundreds of thousands of acres of mountain ranges and whatever else. So that's not hard for me, but that was a huge part, and I highly recommend it a lot to my clients as well. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. I learned also that I am the creator of my life, and that is what we're talking about, the rewriting of your story. And so we're going to get into that. Taking my power back, again, that was the whole forgiveness talk, but there's also a lot of other ways that you take your power back with your thought patterns and the way you show up in your life, all of that, taking your power back and being in the driver's seat of your life. And then learning to feel my emotions, which can be really scary at first, and learning how to process and release them rather than suppress them. And that has to be a really gentle process if you're someone who is dealing with PTSD or childhood trauma, which I definitely was dealing with a lot of childhood trauma. I never had a diagnosis of anything because I was not willing to work with anyone after three very traumatic experiences with therapists. I was done with that. But I do know that I have a lot of childhood trauma. So the list of those healing modalities that I used, some of them came from another mental break that I had in my 40s. And the list of healing modalities is probably a mile long. And I'm not going to share that story of that experience with you, but I will say that all of these modalities I just discussed with you healed me in a way that I never could have imagined. And this is why I do the work that I do. I've been in the darkest abyss. I have suffered through physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, and sexual abuse. I've only shared with you a tiny sliver of what I have been through in my life. But standing on the other side of an absolute mental, emotional, spiritual breakdown, being in the abyss of hell on earth, I am telling you. I will tell you one example so you can understand. I got to a point in my life where self-harm was beyond. My husband was like, I need help. And I told him, I said, I will not go to therapy. I will not speak to a soul. I climbed out of this on my own. And I'm not saying other people have to do this. I'm not saying you should do this. But there was, a reason that I did this, because along the way, I gathered tools and learned and gained the absolute compassion to allow me to hold healing space for others who are on a similar journey. And I learned the tools that helped me get out and rewrite my story. because I lived 40 some odd years of my life now looking back, very dissociated, very disconnected. I lived my life out of my trauma. And in my 40s, when I had an absolute break, I finally took my power back and rewrote my story. And I want to tell you the absolute power there is in rewriting your story. This doesn't mean that these things didn't happen to you. It doesn't mean that your feelings around whatever you've experienced in your life aren't valid. What it means is that you get to rewrite the narrative of this story and how it shapes your life in the present moment. Trauma and suffering can cause us to live our lives reacting to our circumstances and living in a state of just going through the motions every day. We can be dissociated. We put up walls to protect ourselves, and in the process, we damage our relationships. We may have outbursts of anger. We may suffer from constant anxiety. We may have worthiness wounds. And in all of that pain, life is barely worth living at times. Or we may be just going through the motions, not really truly living. You may just be living, carrying a heavy weight of suffering everywhere you go. And this is where the power of rewriting that story comes in. When you start implementing self-care, that's the first place to start, taking care of yourself. And then healing strategies, layering the healing strategies on as you're able to accept and utilize them to overcome that pain that's holding you back. You stop telling yourself that your abuse was your fault or that there's something wrong with you. You stop believing the narrative that other people told you. You stop believing the story that you told yourself about the abuse or abandonment or neglect that you experienced, and you start changing that story. You're able to muster the power to put the blame where it belongs. The blame is not on you. You no longer allow someone else's toxic behavior to dictate how you feel about yourself. You can have the courage to say, this ends here. This ends now. You may have told me I was stupid. You may have abused me. You maybe made me feel small. You maybe bullied me, but this ends today because the blame is on you. You are the one with the problem, not me. This is where this healing journey starts to lead you. You now take your power back. You change the story. You no longer make that story, that trauma, that abuse, whatever it was that happened in your past, you no longer make that mean something negative about you because it doesn't. This is where you say, I will no longer allow you to have one more minute of power over me. I will no longer allow you to rob me of one more second of my happiness. This is where you rewrite that story, and it goes from survival to triumph. You take your power back. That's when you triumph. And this is what my intuitive spiritual coaching is all about. It is about supporting you through a journey from survival and just going through the motions of life to putting you in the driver's seat, allowing you to take that power back and thrive. So I'm going to look at a few of these healing modalities really quickly. The meditative healing journeys. And I know I said they're different for everyone, but these journeys allow you to go back to the defining moments in your life that have caused you to live in survival mode. These defining moments that may have fractured a part of your soul, where part of you still remains. We kind of leave these little fragments of ourselves along the way in these moments because we keep reliving them, right? They keep hurting you. You still have beliefs about yourself around these events. This part of you keeps replaying that pain, replaying that suffering, replaying that moment, or believing something about yourself because of it. And you continue to live out of this until you go back and you help that part of you heal and reintegrate so that you can be whole again. And that's what a meditative healing journey does. That's just a basic overview. Journaling is another one. When I talk about journaling, I'm not talking about the kind of journaling you're thinking of where you write about your day and detail your life. That's not what I'm talking about. I am talking about doing the inner work. You write love letters to your younger self, telling her what she needed to hear in those difficult times. You write angry letters to those that hurt you, and you say uncensored cuss words and everything. Journaling is where you go through a healing process. You might write poetry. You may write angry things where you're just letting it all come up. You may write loving, supportive things, whatever is coming up. But this journaling is just part of the healing experience, a part of the journey. And it is extremely helpful. Sometimes I do intuitive journaling where I can get messages that are helpful. It just depends on where you're at in the moment and what needs to come up. And we kind of learn about intuitively doing that when I work with my clients. The other one is nature baths. And this is where you experience just being. There's no expectations, no schedules, no rules. You can just be one with nature and just be. Research has actually shown that the frequencies of the song of birds and the sounds of water can lower cortisol levels and reduce anxiety and depression. And in Japan, they've done a lot of research on this, and sometimes this is prescribed for people. This connection with nature and this time to reconnect with yourself allows you to go inward and receive guidance that you need on your healing journey. I love nature baths. Very, very, very important. Meditation. So daily meditation is crucial to connecting and allowing whatever needs to come up to surface, because you need that time and space to allow it to happen. And in our busy schedules and busy lives these days, we just don't allow things to come up. We keep trying to push through. We keep trying to push it down so we can, I got one more thing. I got a schedule. I got places to be. I got to go to work. I got to take care of the kids, whatever it is. We don't have time. And so this is a time for you to really connect and see what needs to come up and what needs to be worked on. And it can be uncomfortable. In fact, if it isn't uncomfortable, sometimes you're probably not even doing it right. Sometimes it is peaceful and blissful, and other times you might feel restless and discomfort, and it's because something's trying to come up and you need to let that surface and be released. But meditation is amazing. Herbs and essential oils, as I talked about before, they can provide emotional and spiritual healing and even connection that help you on your journey. And you may need to work with an herbalist or aromatherapist that understands the energetics and the spiritual properties of the plants in order to utilize them for this type of healing. This is something that I use with my clients if they're interested in it. When I work with my clients, it's all about where they are in their journey and the things that resonate with them. But a lot of people like to use essential oils or herbs, and so I definitely do that. And the healing stones and crystals I talked about, these were fundamental for me. I have used Apache tears. I love Apache tears when we're doing a meditative healing journey where either me or someone I'm working with is facing trauma or grief, because it allows them to do so with courage. And not only the courage to face it, but also the courage to let it go. I have used Apache tears during my healing journey, and I absolutely love Apache tears for that. I use angelite often for anxiety because it brings a sense of peace and tranquility. These stones really do have beautiful frequencies that can harmonize with your own frequency and help balance your energy out. And I will use them with my clients if they're interested in using them. It really depends on what resonates with you. And we're all on our own journey, and we can use whatever modalities resonate on your journey. And some people, therapy works phenomenally well for them. And it may be that is what they are drawn to, and they are able to find someone that can hold that space and can bring them through that journey. That is amazing. Therapy is absolutely great for a lot of people. So, you know, some people will use medication. Some people will use herbs. Some people, it's a journey that you are on, and you really have to walk that journey very intuitively and what resonates with you. I do also have, you know, some people that have religious conditioning, or they're very grounded in the physical plane of existence and they're not really connected to any other plane of existence. And so they don't understand some of these modalities, and that's okay. There are many modalities available to help anybody of all beliefs, all backgrounds, all of your needs or whatever. And so I really like to honor that when I'm working with clients. And sometimes I am, you know, we're just intuitively working through whatever that person needs. Hopefully this was kind of helpful for you in seeing how you can rewrite your story, you can take your power back, and how this healing journey can bring you to a place where you can experience happiness and joy and success and a fulfilling life beyond the pain, beyond the hurt, beyond whatever it is that you've experienced in your life, and not take that narrative with you throughout your life that is causing you harm or holding you back. And if you have enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe for more inspiring content, because I do generally come out with a new podcast every week. We talk a lot about going through emotional healing, intuitive healing. And if you're interested in intuitive spiritual coaching, please check out my website for more information. It's aurasoulinstitute.com. You can also follow me on Instagram for more kind of content and information about that. And there's a lot of resources, guides, and support that you can receive on your healing journey. And I really appreciate you being with me today and holding space for my story, or even just a little sliver of my story, and kind of my journey through healing and the modalities that I used. And I hope that maybe there may be a modality that I talked about that provides help for you, or just even inspiration that there is healing on the other side, that there is hope, that there is hope for healing and hope for happiness and hope for joy and hope. That hope, even if all this does is give you hope in your life, then this has done exactly what my intent was, is to give you hope for healing in your life. And I really wish that for every person, that they can move beyond and rewrite their story and transform their lives and come to a place where they find peace. And I really appreciate you being here with me today. And I hope to see you next time.